He's back.
From the studios of Wavefront Audio Visual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 108 of Little Brother for the 19th of November, 2022. Stay tuned. Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants, and not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com, or you can leave a comment on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. So, let's get started. It sounds as though the legendary privacy of Apple's iPhone is possibly just a legend. As reported by Gizmodo last week, a pair of security researchers at software company MISC have determined that some recent changes to the Apple ecosphere cause your iPhone to report every tap of the screen back to Apple. That by itself is a problem. But you can just opt out, right? Right? Well, yes you can, but apparently that doesn't mean that your wishes get honored. When prompted for details by Gizmodo, MISC selected some apps that are known or expected not to collect any kind of analytics, and found that analytics were still being sent nonetheless, of the sort that could be used to fingerprint a device or profile a user. Come this week, in response to that news, a lawsuit was filed in California naming Apple as the defendant, alleging violation of the California Invasion of Privacy Act, and claiming that Apple's illusion of privacy is just that. Back in August, DuckDuckGo, mostly known as a privacy-respecting search engine, and for the record, my search engine of choice, began offering the ability on Android to block trackers from the applications that you use. From the discussions I've had with others, it appears as though the application establishes itself as a VPN, with the VPN server being a proxy running on your phone itself. With all of the filtering happening locally, and all of the traffic filtering through it, the blocking of trackers is as good as the list of patterns that can be provided for it to block. The update that I have for you on this month is that the list now appears to be complete. Bleeping Computer is reporting that the app tracking protection blocks all tracking attempts in the background and does so without noticeable performance problems on your device. Downloading and installing the app is as simple as a visit to the Google Play Store, a fact that I find intensely ironic. Dazzle camouflage is a form of camouflage usually used on ships that was extensively used during the two world wars, not to render ships invisible, but to prevent them from being ranged or identified, thus making them very difficult to hit. Students at the University of Maryland have taken this concept into the age of AI by producing, of all things, a sweater that you can wear that has a similar effect on human detecting AI. The pattern on the sweater consists of portions of images that imply people off in the distance in an open space, and it noises up the image enough to prevent an AI from getting an effective or useful lock on the wearer. Combined with some other techniques, such as masking or juggalo makeup, we are starting to get a nice-sized set of tools to escape from the barrage of ubiquitous surveillance to which we are subjected in contemporary society. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. Well, here we are again. It's time for another round of Who Got Pwned This Week. We have two this week. First up, we have Booz Allen Hamilton. Booz Allen Hamilton is an IT consulting firm based out of Virginia with a multinational footprint. With that qualification, one might think that they were up to the task of not getting pwned, but not in this case. According to a company disclosure sent to the Montana Attorney General's office, and probably to others as well, a former employee had obtained a report that was improperly stored on a company SharePoint system. The report contains personally identifiable information for an undisclosed number of the firm's employees, including their names, social security numbers, compensation, gender, race, ethnicity, date of birth, and security clearance. Booz Allen Hamilton has offered the affected employees 2 years of credit monitoring. Ooh. This has become something of a norm in the case of data breaches, but it is also something of a joke. Credit monitoring won't help if the data falls into the hands of bigoted groups who are going looking for insert slur here to cause problems for them. And that report contains information about many protected classes which are protected for this very reason. For that matter, as security clearance is part of the data set, I see this data set making it very easy for a foreign intelligence service bent on blackmail to get what they need. Additionally, most of the data will be valid in 2 years' time, so all a scammer needs to do is wait 2 years for the credit monitoring to end before acting on it. The moral of this story is this. HR, get your damn act in order. You hold the keys to people's lives. And if you aren't sure what you are doing, how are you securing it? Get with the company's IT or cybersec departments and figure it out. Having this happen at an IT consulting firm is an embarrassment. And it speaks of a siloed structure with departments not talking to each other. Get with the program. Next up is FTX. FTX is a cryptocurrency exchange based in the Bahamas. Now, maybe I should say they were a cryptocurrency exchange based in the Bahamas. I don't know. Anyway. That's what business they were founded on and are generally engaged in. So, cryptocurrency exchanges in general are in the business of trading this cryptocurrency for that, or of trading whatever cryptocurrencies they deal in for other assets. For instance, if you wanted to buy $100 worth of Bitcoin, These are the folks that you would send a C-note to. At the time of writing, this would get you about 60 microbits and 3 satoshis. At a later date, you could turn that back into dollars, or into some other currency if you like, crypto or traditional. That's the idea anyway. The problem that arises is that these exchanges hold the assets for you. You don't need them to, but they do. That means that the assets are all in one convenient place to get pilfered. As it turns out, FTX were already in bankruptcy proceedings in the US since a little over a week ago, and then they got pwned. Now, I'm not sure how a Bahamian company declares bankruptcy in the US, but maybe it works because the Bahamian dollar is pegged to the US dollar. By the way, is anyone else amused about a Chapter 11 bankruptcy filing being made on November 11th, 11-11? And I wonder if they filed it at 11-11 a.m.? No? All right, whatever. Anyway, back to the pwn. Unlike a pwn of a typical corporation, even a bank, when a cryptocurrency exchange gets pwned, the assets that they're holding can move. That's right. The attackers can rob the bank over the wire. Once a cryptocurrency moves, the only one who can reverse the transaction is whoever received it. Now, the good news here is that cryptocurrencies have proved in the past not to be quite as untraceable as some might think they are or like them to be. Back in February, one of the stories that I ended up not using was that of Ilya Liechtenstein and his wife Heather Morgan, who were arrested on money laundering charges after they attempted to cash out over 119,000 Bitcoin that had been pilfered from another bankrupt cryptocurrency exchange, Bitfinex. Their haul would be worth just under $2 billion, that's with a B, at today's exchange rate. Sometimes I think it is all too easy for big tech companies to forget that we sometimes need their products for work. A Reddit user who goes by Jim's Hilday posted a message on r sysadmin with the headline, "This Today from Microsoft." In it, he posted a message from Microsoft, go figure, that reads, quote, "Microsoft now offers the ability to link an Azure Active Directory work account and a personal Microsoft account. With this change, AAD users with a linked MSA account can now earn Microsoft rewards points for Microsoft Bing searches. The ability to link the accounts will be enabled by default, so account linking is available to an organization's employees," end quote. He follows by saying, quote, "Is anyone else sick to death of Microsoft's relentless attempts to market directly to your staff? Fortunately, this can be turned off," end quote. You bet. While I am an infrastructure guy professionally, I am grateful that, for the most part, I don't have the job of managing Microsoft desktops, aside from the one that sits on my desk at work. I don't generally use their products at home or here in the studio. I imagine that all of the babysitting that Microsoft requires would get really, really tiring. It's not enough to just stay on your toes looking for the next threat from a virus or a ransomware gang. No, you have to watch Microsoft themselves and be ready to issue new group policies to turn off this sort of stupidity. And stupidity this is. In the corporate world, there's often talk about work-life balance. Sometimes it's spoken of genuinely, sometimes longingly, sometimes mockingly, but it is spoken of nonetheless. Usually, when we talk about it, We're talking about keeping the time spent at work down to a reasonable level so that we have time for our families. But I'm going to use the phrase in a different context. While I believe that it is perfectly okay to make friends, even long-term friends, in the workplace, and to encourage friends and family to work where you do if you like what you do, or if they need a job, I don't think it's right to be pushed in the direction of linking your work and your personal life. They need to be separated to the degree that you want them to be. This is actually part of the reason why I use a pseudonym in this podcast. By having this encouragement to link your personal account to your work account, you are being encouraged to open an unneeded hole in your firewall. I mean, I guess if it suits you to do so, fine, but you should really be looking at this super skeptically. Why does Microsoft want you to do this? The answer, of course, is so that they can further stick their nose into your life. Information about you is money. You should expect the same behavior from other big tech vendors to follow this, if indeed it's not already happening. However, for desktop and laptop devices, Microsoft owns the lion's share of the workplace, and they own the lion's share of the home. And you should resist the urge to link this to your personal life, no matter how many shiny baubles they dangle in front of you in the form of reward points or whatever. Just not worth it. This is probably going to annoy at least one of my listeners, but I would be remiss if I did not mention the elephant in the room. I am, of course, talking about Elon Musk and Twitter. How can I describe this except as a clusterfuck in a dumpster fire? So, while I was out for 2 weeks, Elon Musk finally pulled the trigger on buying Twitter. In the time since, I've been watching it burn because, honestly, there's nothing else to do. I've never been a user of the site, so I don't have any direct skin in the game, but it's sometimes been a useful place to get news leads. As tempting as it is, I'm not inclined to engage in any actual schadenfreude here. Instead, I want to point out something that I think a lot of people don't know, or don't realize, or don't believe, and that is this. There are no heroes and no villains. The great man theory is a myth, possibly even a bald-faced lie. Wikipedia explains the great man theory this way, quote, "The great man theory is a 19th century approach to the study of history, according to which history can be largely explained by the impact of great men or heroes, highly influential and unique individuals who, due to their natural attributes, such as superior intellect, heroic courage, extraordinary leadership abilities, or divine inspiration, have a decisive historical effect." The theory is primarily attributed to the Scottish essayist, historian, and philosopher Thomas Carlyle, end quote. The idea lives on to this day. We see it in business, we see it in politics. The fact that people believe it actually explains the most recent U.S. presidency, as much as it explains those who backed the president's inability to understand that those who backed the current president really don't care if you tear him down. You see it attached to a certain names historically. Carnegie, Vanderbilt, Edison, Tesla, Sarnoff, Armstrong, and yes, more recent entries such as Buffett, Gates, Bezos, Jobs, Branson, and of course, Musk. Problem is, it's a lie. It's a cult of personality. People who believe in it and hold it to be true look to their personal heroes as infallible. Trump proclaimed that he could shoot somebody in Times Square and not be touched. Similarly, someone a few days ago commented that Elon Musk could probably slam his his junk in the door of a car, and there would be a bunch of people ready to defend it as a brilliant business move, using whatever contorted logic was necessary to get there. Now, do these so-called heroes do good things? Sure. Just understand this. They're not perfect. They are as human as you and I. But they may get out of touch, and they may suffer from isolation. They may suffer from hubris. Getting back to Musk, Tesla Motors was a brilliant thing. Tesla wasn't the first company to build an electric car that was fun to drive. That honor goes to AC Propulsion. But you see, AC Propulsion didn't want to build cars. They wanted to build drivetrains. And their drivetrain appeared in the Tesla Roadster. No, Tesla became the industry leader mostly because they disrupted the market and forced the other car makers of the world to get on board. There are actually a great number of things not to like about Tesla, and I'm personally disinclined to own one. SpaceX is also brilliant, because it meant that government no longer had a monopoly control of spacefaring. Starlink is brilliant, because it has the potential to disrupt ground-based internet service if they can just get it working up to their stated potential and at a reasonable price. But all of those were creations made by entering an existing market with a new product that disrupted things. Twitter? Twitter wasn't anything like that. Musk's success seems to have left him with the impression that he could do anything. Now he, and the world, knows better. The great man theory is a myth. There are people who can and will do great things, but by no means are they infallible. As the saying goes, the bigger they are, the harder they fall. And right now, I do not envy Musk of the landing he's going to have at the end of this fall. You cannot trust computer repair services. At least, that's the finding of a team of security researchers from the University of Guelph. This probably doesn't come as news to most of my listeners. There have long been anecdotes and rumors about taking a computer to this or that big box store and having the technicians looking into the contents of the computer. Rumors about somebody taking their computer in who has some sort of illegal content and getting busted. Well, I mean, this whole story about Hunter Biden's laptop has traction because, to a degree, the premise is plausible. So how often does it happen? Well, security researchers Jason Sessi, Jonah Stegman, and Hassan Khan decided to find out. So they took some laptop computers, loaded them with a Windows 10 image that had a problem that needed fixed for the computer to operate correctly, filled it with various types of content that might call attention to itself, turned on a keylogger, and sent them in for repairs. Don't you know they took the bait? After getting the laptops returned, they examined the activities of the technicians and sorted them into categories. Access of document folders, access of picture folders, of folders of revealing pictures, folders full of finance data, browsing history, copying of data, any effort taken to clear the quick access and clearing the logs. Every one of these things happened at least once. However, it happened more often if the user profile implied that the machine's owner was a woman, and more often at local shops than at national ones. That actually surprised me. This is not a good look for an industry that has most of the population at its mercy. So what can we do? Well, back in episode 95, I mentioned that cell phone maker Samsung has started equipping their devices with what they call repair mode. In repair mode, a technician has full access to the device's software, but no access to any of its content. It's not out of the question to introduce the equivalent of this to laptop or desktop computers. As it is right now, certain Linux distributions offer the opportunity when you install them to encrypt the user's home directory separate from the disk as a whole. Ubuntu, Linux Mint, and probably a few others have this on offer. If this were a more commonly found operating system family, this solution is a no-brainer to prevent this kind of problem. I could suggest, of course, the idea of keeping your content actually off the computer on removable media or inside encrypted containers. However, you can't trust that the apps that you use are on the same page. Through no nefarious intent, of course, they may spill the beans about what you're using your computer for. This is not a good place to be. Unfortunately, as Windows is the dominant operating system, without having a home folder encryption option, preferably one that is on by default, we have a problem that is solvable to tech mavens, but completely impenetrable to the average user. And that needs to change. As usual, we'll end this week's show with the fail of the week. Google's parent company, Alphabet, wins this one with a bug in the Android operating system as found on the Google Pixel 5 and 6. According to security researcher David Schutz, you can unlock either of these two phones by entering your PIN three times, locking the SIM, then entering your personal unlock key, recovering the SIM. This results in the security dialog being mistakenly dismissed by the OS, and you're in. A fix for this was issued on November 7th, so y'all know what I'm about to say. If you are carrying one of these two phones, patch your systems! Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fongaboo and the crowd at Helix for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 group. Special thanks to Julie Bernstein, Azriel, Ven, Fongaboo, and Knight Rider 007 for story leads. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our Who Got Pwned music is Analog Summer 3 by Asarhad. Our Fail of the Week music is Space Reggae by Zap. Our opening theme music and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker. And our closing theme is Space Debris by Captain Image. If you have questions or comments about this podcast or want to join the conversation, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next week when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Stay safe and be well. Now, I'm not sure how a Bahamian country, I think it is all too easy for big tech companies to remember, to forget. Hold on. A Redditor user who goes by Jim posted a Reddit, if you are being encouraged, there's no if in there, have a divisive, historian and philosopher, Tarmis, through no fisteria,